Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
They are brutal. If you've ever tried to garden under one of those things, there's no way. They suck up all the nutrients, and we're talking Norway maple, suck up all the nutrients. The canopy is so heavy, no rain gets down there, no light, it's tough.
But may I ask you, what's more important, the tree or the little beautiful garden underneath? I got to ask you the question. I mean, so
my little beautiful garden underneath.
Get over yourself. So, in the bottom line,
he named his show The Mike Novak Show.
Oh, stop it.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If you can't find him on Facebook, it's because he's got a paper bag over his head. Here he is, Mike Novak.
All I can say is, wow, what a week. It's been very interesting on a number of levels. How you doing over there? We still connecting computers and things? Were you able to get
Twitter? Twitter's fighting back. Facebook was open and loving, as it usually is.
When are we going to have that technical meeting about everything in this studio?
I don't.
We got to have that technical meeting.
When you and I stop, throwing things together at the last minute ourselves, then we'll work on that.
Yeah, but you're here during the week. You got to talk
to
these people. Say, get rid of the Adobe minus 4.2. Mm-hmm. Put in something real. I want TweetDeck on
it's
here.
It's functional.
Are we functional?
Yes.
Ah, there we are.
I dubbed it so, as you can see.
Okay.
So we're tweeting, folks. Good morning.
Good morning. Boy. Nice rains, huh?
Oh, my goodness.
I can tell you stories about that, too. I wasn't even in Chicago when that happened. I was out west, and a friend's got a house on the Rock River out near Moline, and I was out there because I was also visiting the Tour de Trees as they made their way through Kewaunee, Illinois, and I'm going to talk about that later. I want to tell you, though, we've got a ton of stuff up on the website, mikenovak.net, MikeNowak.net. On the homepage, four different slideshows, I think, and video of you and me cutting a rug.
That's awesome.
That's the best part.
I love that.
We have got Heather and me and Janet Bornanson from the Tree Fund on the stage in Millennium Park. And was that fun or what?
That was beyond fun. That was just having coffee in Millennium Park at 7 in the morning on a nice day.
While Chuck Lavelle tickled the ivories and played a little.
I know.
And you took videos
I've got videos. I've got that file for you. But my God.
Oh, really? Did you bring it in?
He was smiling at me and winking at me. And even at the end, when he's done with the song, he turns and gives me this little head nod. And I'm just like, he totally played that for me. And I just felt like the coolest thing in the world. Cool by association.
And you got to go see the video of, at the very end, when Chuck was playing Riders Off. And they were headed out of the Millennium Park, and he did one song. We had more time to kill. So I said, how about another one? So he plays Route 66, and Heather and I started dancing with Janet on stage.
I know how to follow your lead, sir.
Yeah, we actually synced up a couple of times there.
A couple of times.
That was cool. And then I went out to Kewaunee later in the week, and I'll tell you about that later. But caught up with the Tour de Trees at the historic Osage Orange. And there's video of that. Those pictures, there's video of some of the riders climbing a tree, and they're not climbing, they're riding up the tree, and you have to see the technology. It is so awesome. And then we've got a report from last week's report from the parking lot farm, but you and I have so much to talk about in terms of the parking lot farm.
Oh, yes.
Because Heather has been getting an education.
Crash course.
Crash course in gardening.
Sure have.
Because I'm not around during the week, basically. It's
it
takes me
cell
a half
phone,
a
day. I'll kill you.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, help me.
It takes me half a day just to get here, all right? On a weekday.
Yes.
Sundays are easy.
Yeah.
But during the week,
much harder.
Pulaski is just
It's inconveniently
a nightmare.
Located, yeah, as I like to tell people.
Totally inconveniently
yeah.
located. About as inconveniently located as you can get.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not near
outside
anything.
Outside of, like, you know, a border patrol checkpoint kind of thing. This is the yeah. second.
We're in East Berlin here.
Yeah. But they gave us microphones.
Yeah, so we can do that. But we'll talk about the parking lot farm. No, now, of all the weeks, not to have Rick DeMille.
I know.
He's on vacation. He gets a day off once in a while, so we'll dig up a forecast for you, which you're working on, right?
Yes, I am.
I remember the last time Rick wasn't around, and
you totally called me out on getting one from the gargantua media source that you don't like so much, and I was trying so hard, but I found an accurate one. You just didn't like the source. That's what I'm. That's
I just,
my testimony.
I just
and I'm
want an accurate
to
one today. I mean, Rick
you
sent me
it.
Something yesterday, but you know,
like a hot and steamy, icy chance of rain, partly sunny, partly cloudy. That's my guess.
I'm thinking it's cooler and not so much rain. It wouldn't be possible to have as much rain. He's not here. But let give in a nutshell before we get to Amtrak, Tim, because he's holding on, and I'm glad to hear from him again. Who are we starting with there? Because this is your idea.
An amazing group of fellas from New Orleans called Mr. Paul Sanchez, who's a musician down in New Orleans, and then Chris Joseph, his friend, who helped found this group called Threadhead Records down in New Orleans, Louisiana, right after Hurricane Katrina, to help musicians get their music pressed and released, just get it made and give it an opportunity to be marketed. And it's a non-for-profit, the way it works. The artist gets some money, they pay back the loan, if you will, from the record company, and then a certain percentage of the proceeds from 5 to 10% all go factored back into the New Orleans music community to help keep the musicians working. It's just sort of like this integral cog that's like helping keep these people feeding their families. And now Katrina, they were kind of finally finding some common ground, and then come along BP.
Yeah, how
and
nice.
They're almost, it's almost five, six years ago all over again.
All right, let me play just a sample
yeah.
of which one of the, we're going to save.
The one, number, the track 13, Nobody Knows Nothing.
Oh, no, I was going to save that
okay.
because we're playing that later.
Okay.
Give me something, what else? Other than 12 or 13?
I'd say A Stew Called New Orleans.
Okay, that sounds.
These are also the folks that work on the HBO series Tremé.
I'm not even familiar with that.
Yeah, sadly.
See what I mean about this stew called New Orleans. It's a gumbo pot for sure. It is and it ain't, and it's so much more.
Okay, that's an idea.
Yeah, now that's John Boutte. He's another Threadhead artist. Sadly, he won't be on the show with us today. But the man he worked on that album with and produced
Paul Sanchez.
Is Paul Sanchez will be on the show with
us
today.
And he's going to be here. And also
Chris Joseph.
And Chris's role in all of this?
Chris is kind of the glue that brought them all together. You know,
okay.
He saw John and Paul performing, and they were joking around that Paul needed to produce John's next album, and Paul made a joke that that would require money. And lo and behold, came a good man with a good heart who had some money.
There you go. So they start the show at 9 o'clock. Mick Dumke from late of the Chicago Reader. He's left. The Chicago Reader. If you go to my website, mikenovak.net, this week's show, you'll see where he's headed. We're going to talk recycling because the lead story in the Reader this week is about recycling and where we are. And I'll give it to you in a nutshell. We're nowhere with recycling in Chicago. And a lot of people are very frustrated, and I'm one of them. So we'll talk to Mick about that. And then we're going to talk to Reini Draigala, or Draigala. I have to find out exactly how his name is pronounced, with Clear Choice. It's a product that promises that you'll use less in the way of chemicals on your lawn, on your garden, actually. So we'll find out about that later on. So let us go to, let me get this up here. Line one, and a guy who hasn't been with us in a long time, and that is Amtrak Tim. How are you?
Doing fine, Mike. How you doing?
I'm great. In fact, I kind of figured you'd call this week because I got something in the mail. I get notices from the governor's office. And one of the ones I got this week, here's the headline. Governor Quinn announces construction to begin on Chicago to St. Louis high-speed rail route. And I'm wondering if that's why you're calling.
Well, that's part of it. And the second part of it is Amtrak has just made its second, it's just made a very large purchase of rail cars, which it hasn't done in 10 years.
Wow, what kind of cars?
They're going to buy 130 single-level rail cars. Most of the baggage cars, because the baggage cars they use now were from the Eisenhower era, like in the 1950s.
And they would only fit those really bulky old-time suitcases, right? I'm kidding.
Well, something like that. But the thing is, those cars got of they're old, they're inefficient, they're too heavy. Mm-hmm. They got to go. The other thing, I think the reason they're going for these the single-level cars is they're trying to go for the 110-mile-hour service, which is what Illinois is going to be doing. But the other reason I want to call you, your show, is the Amtrak budget is basically in flux right now. There's two parts to it. There's the operating budget, which they have. It's been approved. It's the request has been fulfilled. What I want your listeners to do is to call about high speed, because high speed is getting cut. They're reducing the budget outlay.
Well, you mean the national budget for Amtrak?
Well, Amtrak is two parts. There's the high speed outlay. Right, which is going to be to improve speeds on the track, and the operating budget. The operating budget is done. They got their request. They're cutting the high speed. And if people don't start calling the senators, our two senators are pretty good, but if they start calling some of the other senators, high speed is going to become more of a dream than a reality.
Now, I'm trying to imagine. Well, you know, when you're dealing with Congress, I suppose I should not be silly and say, how could they do that? Then I sound like an idiot, and I sound pretty naive, because they're capable of almost anything, most of it bad, and mostly the Senate.
You've got a bunch of global warming deniers who are just going
exactly.
To be,
you know, I want to bring him into this room and tell him about 7-inch rains in Milwaukee and Chicago and say, tell me climate change doesn't exist. Tell me that these events are not happening. You know, all the people last year said, oh, it's really cold, so how can there be climate change? And then you have these events where unprecedented rain events and maybe not so much the heat event. We haven't had it the way New York and some of the other places in the country have had it, but still. And the same people, they're going to deny climate change, and then they're going to vote against high speed rail. So when does this vote come up, Tim?
It's going to be coming up in the next, when the Congress comes back. So we really have got to make sure offices are called quite, got to be sure everybody gets called.
Yeah. And like you said, our senators are probably going to vote for it. And if you're progressive in Illinois, you're happy. But if you're from another state, it might not be so much.
Yeah, well, the problem that Amtrak has is within the state of Illinois, we have pretty good service. Pretty much everywhere in the state, the trains, you know, chug along at 79 miles an hour, which isn't bad. But there are a lot of states in the United States, like in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, where the tracks have deteriorated to such a point where those trains are restricted to 35 miles an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
And you're sitting on the Amtrak train, and cars are passing you.
Wow.
I mean, zooming by you.
Yeah. That's amazing. And you're right. The people in those states have to talk to their legislators, talk to their senators, talk to their reps, and say, we need high-speed rail. But I don't know that it's going to happen in those states. And I would imagine they've deteriorated because everybody drives their cars and their trucks.
Well, what happened in those states is that the freight rail companies basically said, we'll just maintain the rails at the absolute minimum requirement to move heavy freight,
mm-hmm.
which is 35 miles an hour, which works fine if you're moving a huge tank car of tar.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't cut it for passenger rail service.
Yeah, you're right. All right. Well, listen. Thank you for the update. I think that I'll give you the short version of the notice I received this week. It's a $98 million. Let's see here. Let's do. An agreement between the Illinois Department of Transportation and Union Pacific Railroad will allow upgrades to be made on an initial 90-mile segment of Union Pacific track to prepare it for high-speed rail. It's going to begin in September in the Chicago to St. Louis corridor. $98 million project is funded through the Federal American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, so don't tell me that the economy isn't, using this money. That the talking point on the right is that money is not working. It hasn't done any good. Well, right here, $98 million going to high-speed rail and jobs in Illinois. So,
and the other, if I could add on to that, the Amtrak's purchase of a rail car, of new passenger cars, are going to be built in Elmira, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be 575 manufacturing and assembly jobs.
More jobs. So there you go.
More jobs.
Tim, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
I'll keep you posted.
As we get near the vote, you should get back to us, and we'll talk some more about it.
All right. Take care, Mike.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We got two musicians standing by.
One musician.
Oh, one musician and one...
Music lover. He might be a musician, outside of things, but he's not one of the guys on the album.
And we'll get to them in just a second. Bring the ocean to your garden. Not the water, but the seaweed. Seaweed? Yes, seaweed. Kelp meal from Espoma consists of brown seaweed that's harvested from the cold, nutrient-rich waters of the North Atlantic Ocean and then dried. Kelp is a good source of nitrogen and potash, as well as plant hormones, which promote plant growth and healthy soil. Espoma kelp meal is manufactured from the best species of kelp for horticultural and agricultural use and offers all of the benefits of a liquid seaweed, but in a granular, mixable form. Sorry, ocean breeze not included. Espoma kelp meal, part of Espoma's Organic Traditions product line, is also approved for organic gardening. Espoma is the maker of Hollytone, Plantone, and other organic plant foods. If the word tone is in the name, you know it's made by Espoma. Look for all of the Espoma products at your local garden center. For more information about Espoma natural gardening solutions, call 888-ESPOMA1 or visit Espoma.com. ESPOMA.com. Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
The steamy days of summer are here, and with them all the joys and sorrows of summer gardening. Heather knows all about that. Hmm. We'll talk about that a little later. Sure, you may be able to get the products you need elsewhere, but you won't get the same great advice and personal service that you'll receive at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. Lawn diseases are running rampant this summer, a lot of humidity, and they're usually treated with a fungicide. Sid suggests bringing in a sample of damaged turf, along with photos, if possible, to aid in diagnosing and prescribing treatment. I advise this for anybody who's got a problem with a plant. Instead of, just guessing what it is, take it to somebody who knows what they're talking about. If you take it to SIDS, that's a great place. You know, your local independent garden center, take it to Extension Service, take it to Botanic Garden or the Morton Arboretum, and have a pro take a look at it. Now, the same goes for infected trees and shrubs. SIDS also carries a complete line of repellents to help allow us gardeners live in harmony with nature's creatures, such as the neighborhood squirrels, rabbits, chipmunks, you know, the deer, destroying your yard and gardens. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. For hours and directions, visit SIDSonline.com. And remember, starting tomorrow, July 26th through Saturday, August 7th, you can spend your SIDS bucks for up to 50% of your total purchase at SIDS.
The Gulf spill is a tragedy that never should have happened. BP has taken full responsibility for cleaning up the spill in the Gulf. To those affected and your families, I'm deeply sorry.
Keep your sorry, sorry won't clean the spill. Save the lives you killed, nor change how I feel. So don't say sorry, think that we don't know. But we know how this goes, it's just damage control. To whom it may concern, come here, first things first, tell me, how much is this dead pelican worth? How does it feel to have a man's blood on your shirt? Single-handedly put a whole industry out of work. I don't care who fault it is, nope, but y'all ain't gonna deceive me. Think I'ma sit back and watch the whole river bleed. Only quality time that I had coming from my dad was fishing, and you took that from me. We know the richest oil states are in the south, but you can't bring your rigs in until you wipe the fishing out. Take the livelihood from us, watch the people go broke, and watch a man's greed destroy the whole Gulf Coast. You think my eyes wide shut, but Shamar can see. Keep you sorry, cause sorry ain't gonna do nothing for me. I'm trying to spread the opprobrium to everybody, so that's Transocean, Halliburton, and BP.
I guess that would be our cue to go to line two and line four and bring in Chris Joseph and Paul Sanchez. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks so much for having us.
Good morning.
Good morning. And, you know, Heather, I should kind of let you take this away because you've set all of this up.
Well, for good reason, because these guys are doing really good work and keeping music in New Orleans alive and well, and it's important because it's part of our American culture. And these two guys are doing an amazing job. So, how are you guys doing this morning?
I'm
doing
well
here in New Orleans.
I just wanted to say that I heard you guys talking about whether or not I was a musician. And if singing in my car means I'm a musician, then yes, I am.
Oh, good. Then I am too, thank God.
And that, of course, would be Chris Joseph. You know, I sing in my car, too. But it doesn't necessarily make me a musician. But Paul Sanchez is...
He's the resident pro here this morning.
Yeah, and I know Heather talked a little earlier about how you guys put Threadhead together, but maybe you want to go over that briefly and what it means to have Threadhead in New Orleans. Who'd like to start with that? Is that your story, Chris?
Why don't I start about how this started, and then Paul can talk about maybe the what it means part. Paul and I met a little over 3 years ago at a private party in New Orleans. Paul was playing with John Boutte, and a couple people went up to Paul and John after their music set and told them that they should make a CD, and the response was, well, we would if we had money, but we're having trouble paying the rent after Katrina. And so I asked Paul how much it would take to make a record, and he said about $10,000. And
that's chump change, right?
Well, you know, I figured, okay, you know, there's a lot of people who love this music, and let's see if we can raise the money, and we did. And they made two albums. They made Good Neighbor by John Boutte and Exit Mystery Street by Paul Sanchez. And from that, we decided, hey, let's see if we can help other people. And in 3 years, we've made about 24 CDs.
Wow. And does all of the money go to Gulf Aid or some of it? I know that you know part of what you're trying to do is pump money back into the Gulf area.
Right. What we do is loan money to the musicians. They pay us back within a year of the CD's release, and then they pay back 10% above and beyond that. And to date, most of that 10% has gone to the musicians' clinic. The song that Paul and some other musicians in New Orleans just put together, Nobody Knows Nothing, the proceeds of that are going to Gulf Aid.
Oh, okay. So in general, it goes to the musicians, and of course, that's to keep music alive in New Orleans. I know you're not doing it single-handedly, but this has got to help, I would think. Perhaps you want to address that, Paul.
He's very humble about how much of an impact they've had. First of all, the city was so empty and so devastated after the flood that it was a big question was where is the new music going to come from, because so many young musicians had left and stuff. And it did start with a casual conversation and did begin with just $10,000. But in the 4 years since, they've raised over $250,000 for making records, which the musicians pay back through the record sales. And they've also raised an additional $250,000 that they've donated to the New Orleans Musicians Clinic. And so those things are quite amazing that they've done. And all of it's volunteer. Nobody that works for Threadhead Records is in the music business. They're all people from other walks of life who just love music so much they volunteer their time, their energy, and their money to make it happen. And the impact beyond that is a young musician like Shamar Allen, whose music you started your show with today for this interview. 5 years ago, he was a 24-year-old musician with a newborn son and who lost his house in the flood. And with the help of Threadhead Records, he's now a young man who's teaching back through Fest for Kids and donating instruments and time and energy to teach young kids how to play brass band music. And he also made that song that you played on your show just now, made it in a home studio that he's built himself, recorded a video with a camera he bought and directed it and edited himself, and now he's got 50,000 hits on YouTube. And there was a kid who, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, had nothing because of the flood, and with the Threadhead's help, he's independent. He's standing on his own. That song that you played is a free download just for awareness' sake.
Yeah, I've gone online and gotten it myself, another one that I want to play in its entirety is Nobody Knows Nothing, which is, that's the song that Chris pointed out is having its proceeds go to Gulf Aid, and you can download it for just $1.29. Of course, you can pay more if you want.
I bought it twice.
The musicians involved donated their time. The Preservation Hall donated its space and its recording engineer, and Ben Jaffe, who runs and owns the Preservation Hall, played tuba on it, and it was a beautiful collaboration. Threadhead artists Margie Perez, Susan Cowshill, myself, and of course John Boutte, who these days is singing the theme song for the HBO series Tremé, and his voice is becoming sort of the voice of New Orleans, and his voice is the lead-off voice on that track, and he wrote a lot of the lyrics himself.
As a matter of fact, what was it like teaming up with the Preservation Hall?
It was very exciting for me. I've played there this past Jazz Fest with John Boutte. We did a duo performance, but I've never played with the band. And, it's an historical place. People have come from all over the world to be there. It's a reverential feeling to be there. And to play to record there with the actual band was a pretty honorable experience.
Well, you know what? I think that's our cue to play the song. I want people to hear this, and when they hear it, when I'm done with it, I want them to go online, and you can do that by going to my website, MikeNovak.net, because I've got all the links there to the song, which is Nobody Knows Nothing. Just look for the name of that. Let's just play that, and when we're done, gentlemen, let's talk about it, okay?
Terrific.
Here we go.
And then one day we were fishing for some food, and up from the Gulf came a bubbling goo. BP Halliburton, transocean.
Nobody knows nothing.
Good stuff, you guys.
Good music.
And, thank you very much.
That's featuring the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. How do you pronounce Clint's last name?
Clint Majan.
Majan. Clint Majan, yeah. And Threadhead Records artists John Boutte, Paul Sanchez, Susan Cowsill, Craig Klein, and Margie Perez, written by John Boutte, Bill Lynn, and Paul Sanchez, and produced by Ben Jaffe, Bill Lynn, and Paul Sanchez. And up from the Gulf come a bubbling goo.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention, too, that our friend Bill Lynn, who whose idea it was to get the whole thing rolling and who's friends with Ben and got the studio hooked up at Pres Hall, he's actually got his start in Chicago playing session guitar on rhythm and blues records back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Excellent. See, I'm a firm believer that New Orleans and Chicago are sister cities.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, connected via the river and the blues.
You know it, baby.
Tell me something about, you get through Katrina, you're just starting to come out on the other side, and then this thing, the BP thing, happens. What does that do for your spirit? I mean, what does that, obviously, well, you guys have risen to the occasion and to the challenge to keep on fighting, but that's got to just kind of take it out of you, say, what next?
There's an extreme degree of that I tried not to focus on there, because we've done such a wonderful job of rebuilding our lives in the last 5 years, and there was a great feeling of we made it. The Saints won the Super Bowl, and the city was absolutely euphoric. People that didn't care about sports were swept up in a euphoria of we are winners, we are champions. And then this thing happened, and it's crushing. It's crushing in a far more devastating way for many people than Katrina, because you were able to rebuild your life from Katrina if you lived. In this case, those fishermen who have been down there fishing for five and six generations, it's what they know. The kids start leaving school even before they're out of high school. They're already leaving school early to go out for shrimp season because they know they're going to be shrimpers and fishermen for the rest of their lives. That's going to be gone. It's, you know, that way of life. And it might not be into the millions. It might not, you know, but you're talking about families being wiped out, not old people, young people, families, that this was their life and this was going to be their life. And it's not anymore. It's just gone. And there's already been a suicide by a fishing captain who was known around the docks as a jovial fellow who risen above Katrina, who had fought his way back and made loans and had breakfast with his family and said goodbye to his crew and went into his cabin and ended it. And that level of devastation is not something that's palpable. It's very much like John Goodman's character in The Treme Show, where he went and had beignets and coffee and took a nice ferry ride that he never came back from.
Mm-hmm.
That moment of devastation lies within you. And Shamar's song had an image of him and his father. If you've seen the video on YouTube, an image of him and his father fishing, and he said, the only thing I had with my dad was fishing, and he took that from me. And, you know, black or white, rich or poor, one of my best friends, a very successful businessman here in town, and that's until his father died, that was their thing. You know, his dad was into his 70s, and they would still get together on a Sunday and take their boat out into the Wrigley's or do their fishing from pre-dawn until it was too hot to stay out there. And that's going to change for so many people, not just the recreational side, but the business of life. What we eat, what we were raised in.
Yeah. I was listening to a news story the other day about this, and oddly, there are some, apparently, maybe you can contradict this. What I was hearing is that some, that the catch hasn't been affected, that there's been no tainted food come out of the Gulf.
Yeah, any food that you get from there is safe to eat. It's not going to make its way until it's, you know, inspected and passed.
But the problem, I assume, is that they're not letting these people ply their trade for the most part.
No, that's the problem in part, but I mean, the government is, and you know, it's just such a mess. Are these the same tests that were applied to the rig that blew up in the first place, the same quality of testing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I see what you mean.
It's consider the source.
Right. We don't have to test the rig before it blows up, but gee, if you try to, you know, pull a crab off the bottom of the... Oh,
They were trying to build a sandbar, and they said that they made them stop because they didn't have the permits. I was like, are you kidding?
Well, with all due respect to the, you know, to the people that are doing the testing, the fish had been in the ocean for a billion years, and the oil's been in the ocean for 80 days. How thorough was the testing? And how far-reaching are the impacts? The fish and the creatures of the sea are only now starting to get used to and nibble on the oil and bring it into their system so that we can bring it into ours. So, yes, I want the fishing industry back, but let's not rush to judgment. Yes, I want the oil people to have their jobs back, but let's not just start yelling drill, baby, drill again like, you know, simple-minded idiots, because the testing hasn't been done to that rig, so clearly some other rigs out there are in danger of having the same thing happen.
You know, that's an interesting...
From the Gulf into the La Brea Tarpon.
Right, you bring up an interesting point, and one of the things I've been hearing is that people are protesting on the Gulf. They're saying, don't stop the drilling, don't put a moratorium on them, and, you know, tens of thousands or several thousand people doing that. But aren't some of the other people there, wouldn't they disagree with that sentiment? I mean, how do the neighbor who's working on a fishing rig versus the neighbor who's working on an oil rig, how are they agreeing with each other, or are they antagonistic towards each other?
You're talking about the Gulf states, and in Louisiana in particular, since the 30s, oil goes hand in hand with our prosperity, and our prosperity goes hand in hand with fishing. So one of the things that had to be canceled because of the oil spill was the annual I forget which town, but it's like the annual Marrero Fishing Oil Festival. You know, so
the Fishing Oil Festival.
Fishing/oil festival. So it's like the local oil company promotes the fishing music festival, and it's been going on for, you know, 20 years, but... And I'm not making fun of it. I mean, here's the reality.
No, I know you're not. And I'm thinking this is an oxymoron of the highest order, but obviously this is something that people are comfortable with in the Gulf.
Well, you know, here's the deal, America. Everybody that's listening to this show, including you and me, have done our own bit to bring the oil companies to the powerful position they're in, which is, did you drink out of plastic today? Did you ride a gas-powered vehicle? Did you, you know what I mean? Do you use a computer because they're made out of plastic? So the petrochemical industry is not something that we could do away with. We can't just say, oil man, you are evil and you must go away today. We, first of all, have to reinvent our thinking. You were talking about mass transit before we got on to this on your previous caller.
Yes, yes.
And mass transit in America so needs to be reinvented and reinvigorated, especially, as you mentioned, in Louisiana, where it's just incredibly antiquated. As we face a crisis in this country where the outdated thinking of the 60s of let's bring the interstates directly to the cities is now disappearing in major cities like New York and San Francisco and hopefully in New Orleans as well very soon, that walking and biking and taking public transportation and taking trains is becoming popular again. Maybe the more the Americans embrace those notions of alternate transportation, then maybe we'll rely less on the fuel companies and we'll be less desperate for those 10,000 workers to get their jobs back on rigs that are probably under just as dangerous conditions as the one that blew up.
That kind of says it all,
mm-hmm.
right there. You're right. It's up to all of us to see that these changes are made, and it's not easy. You know, here in Chicago, we're not paying for this the way you are, for our decisions up here the way you are, but we pay for other decisions we make. You know, like when we have, which I've talked about on this show, the threat of Asian carp ending up in the Great Lakes and despoiling the Great Lakes. I mean, how?
Well, you know, this decision, as Heather joked about it earlier in the interview, we are tied. We are bonded by that river. And so what happens in the Gulf of Mexico will most certainly affect the Midwest all the way up into Chicago, because a lot of stuff, especially things that you guys in the Midwest are most famous for, corn and grain and agricultural products, get shipped down to America through the Mississippi River. And if the Port of New Orleans were to get clogged with oil or backed up with traffic because of the oil and alternate means of transportation had to be found for that, that would shift the economy on a national basis.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you for the song. Thank you for Threadhead Records. And as I mentioned before, if you want to get a copy of Nobody Knows Nothing, you can either link to it at my site, or you can, what would be the easiest way? I've got Threadhead Records. It's a long URL.
Here's you can go to threadheadrecords.com.
And just find it there.
It's also available on iTunes.
And on iTunes.
It's on iTunes. And it's... You know, for $1.29, the proceeds are going to go to Gulf Aid, but you always have the opportunity to give a little more. And I'll bet you find that in general, people tend to throw a little bit more into the collection basket, don't they?
Absolutely the case, yes.
As we go out, I know we've got a bunch of songs.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a Paul Sanchez fan. I have been for a number of years, so this is extra special for me. So we're swimming in Threadhead and Sanchez tunes right here, right now. If you play anything else today, I might harm you, mister.
Okay, I got them here. Heather, you tell me what Paul Sanchez song we should be playing to get out and see if Paul agrees with it.
One of my favorite, like, guilty pleasures of Paul Sanchez would be number 18. This one's called Mama's Homebrew.
Does that work for you, Paul?
I love this one.
Hey, man, you guys have been so generous. You could play whatever you like.
There's some that I want to play that, you know, aren't suitable for a Sunday morning, but you can find those folks on the internets and help yourselves, because it's just good music.
Chris Joseph, Paul Sanchez from Threadhead Records. It's... been a pleasure to have you guys on, and keep us posted. Let us know how things are going down there, okay?
Mike, thanks so much for having us on your show.
All right, take care now.
All right, so long. Donkey, and he rode the sunset into Jerusalem, and every day since I've been chasing after him, and me with my poor blind hands feeling for you. As your mercilessly wipe the dirt off my shoe and break the law by drinking my mama's homebrew.
Heather's digging it.
Oh, I love it. And then, and we didn't get into it too much, but the HBO show Treme, John Boutte and Paul have worked a lot on many albums, and the one, A Stew Called New Orleans, is the one that put together that sort of started this whole thing. So mm-hmm. if people are looking for one to start with, That's the one I recommend. And if you've seen Treme...
Give the name of it again?
Stew Called New Orleans.
A Stew Called New Orleans. And that's
John
the name
Boutte
of the CD?
John Boutte and Paul Sanchez. Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. So you might want to pick that up as well. We're going to get to a forecast in just a second. We don't have Rick DeMaio today, unfortunately. He's got vacation on his mind. 7 inches of rain, and we can't get Rick DeMaio on the show. Isn't that amazing? Does your I love you, Rick. Does your soil need an extra boost or something to bust up the clay? Think burrs, cotton burrs, that is. Cotton burr compost from Back to Nature is rich in protein, which is the primary food source for beneficial soil organisms. You know, those little guys that aerate the soil with their tunneling and convert nutrients into a form that plants can use. Cotton burr compost is made up of composted cotton burrs, of course, which are a byproduct of the ginning process, and it's 100% organic. It also accepts and retains moisture like a champ, unlike peat moss. And it's got more nutrients than peat moss. Back to Nature has been composting since 1979, and they are the largest producers of composted cotton burrs in the southwestern United States, but you can find them right here in Chicago. Find out more about cotton burr compost and other fine products from Back to Nature at backtonaturecompost.com. Dr. Wally Apeshes and I both love them, so give them a try. Back to Nature products are available at Fertile Gardens in Chicago, Hawk's Nursery in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, and Pesquazi's in Lake Bluff and Barrington.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Damage and destruction caused by insects and diseases can severely limit the ability of trees and shrubs in your landscape to manufacture the sugars and substances needed to remain healthy. As a tree's health suffers and declines, the odds for defoliation and death sharply increase. Trees that are already in poor health are more susceptible to insects and diseases, so a tree in general good condition will less likely be victimized. A certified arborist from the Care of Trees can evaluate your trees to identify any damage or signs of early disease and explain options available for managing the health of your trees. You know, you hear people say, oh, I've got this sap running out of my trees. Is a tree dead? And that's why you have a pro come out and take a look, and they can tell you whether you need to worry or not. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. Get to that forecast in 30 seconds. If you're a smart gardener, you think about the nutrients and chemicals you add to our water tables. That's why you should call on the doctor, Dr. Earth. Dr. Earth organic fertilizers contain only water insoluble forms of phosphorus. Phosphorus is one of the leading causes of algae blooms in our waterways. When you apply Dr. Earth fertilizers, the phosphorus stays in the soil and doesn't leach into the water supply. In addition, Dr. Earth contains probiotic beneficial soil microbes and mycorrhizae. Dr. Earth is available only at your local independent garden center. Go to drearth.com to find a dealer near you.
It was late this past November, Thanksgiving Day gone by. Come a sound I will remember, a newborn baby's cry.
Well, a little more Paul Sanchez there. All right, the forecast today, partly cloudy. You know what? The bad stuff seems to be gone. High 81. Tonight, it already feels not so humid, although that's going to happen later in the week. Tonight, mainly clear, low 68. Tomorrow, intervals of clouds and sunshine, high of 86. Tuesday, Times of sun and clouds, high in the upper 80s and lows in the mid-70s. And then Wednesday, the thunderstorms might have a chance of coming back. More highs in the upper 80s and lows in the low 70s. So it starts off pretty good this week. And then we move back to the summer, which, you know, we're still in July, and that's what we do. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. As soon as Heather gets off the phone there, we're going, did somebody, oh, okay. Oh, and I'm
whoa,
beeping.
Oh, everything's happening at once. Ah, this is, show, okay?
You know, I love right. it when we beep on the air.
Yeah. Just prove again it's live radio.
It is live yeah. radio. And that I should
that's what I love about it, because anything can happen.
And
you have a terrible habit, though, of not muting your phone.
I know it. Mm-hmm. It is. And Cowgill.
our friends of Mighty House who are on after us for self-help Sundays.
Ron Cowgill just texted me. He says, why is there a rotting tree sticking out of your car?
And why is there a rotting tree?
Get this thing.
There's a branch here, folks. It's kind of funny looking.
Yeah, sitting in the corner. And this
will like. It was one of those like psychic things.
Oh, you mean a divining rod?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of looks like
it
that.
It looks like one. All right. I just thought you'd gone down that road.
That what you are holding in your hand.
It's not going to give me fungi of any kind, is it?
Well, no. It's got some lichens on there, some other things. It's
dead.
Do I
want to know what a lichen is?
You know what a lichen is.
I do?
Yeah, sure you do. A lichen is a kind of a
like a moss?
A plant growth that is, you know, very low down in the plant kingdom.
Okay. I just never knew it was called that. I always
lichen?
Thought that's what this green stuff is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I always called that moss.
No. That moss and lichens are different.
Oh, see, you learn something new every
day,
folks.
We'll look up lichens
here
in a second. You are holding a branch from the historic Osage orange.
I am.
From Kiwani. In fact, I've got a really big branch.
Can we interview the branch? It's seen so much.
It's
I wish
dead.
We could. Oh, it's a damn shame.
It's a dead branch. But they were, we were out at
How old is this dead branch, though?
160 years plus, 170
I wish we
years.
Could interview the dead branch.
It's seen a lot. Saw the Civil War, saw a bunch of things. And this is in Kiwani, where the Tour de Trees came by there on Thursday. I was there with them. You got to understand that the riders, a lot of them are arborists. So Guy Sternberg from downstate, who's been trying to save the tree, was there, and he wanted the riders to come by so he could get the arborist's advice. And a number of them climbed the tree, like I said earlier in the show.
Oh, so cool. Your video?
The video. If you go to the video, you can see them climbing up the tree with this little power, this motor that just hauls them up. With ropes. It's really interesting.
It looked like I thought it was like almost like a leaf blower. It's like you're sitting on a leaf blower in a way. And
it kind of is that. And that video is on my website, MikeNovak.net. And I said to Guy, I said, can I have a branch of the historic Osage Orange? And he said, sure. And I took two, including the big one that's sticking out in the back
and
of the
what
car.
What are your intentions?
I just put them in the yard.
Yeah, in the
you
garden?
You know, just put them in the garden is kind of ornamental.
That's good garden mojo, too,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
So it was really fun being out there and watching. They're pruning the tree and evaluating it. I met the mayor of Kiwani, Bruce Tossel, who's been on the show before. I met some of the council people, and we all talked about the tree. But the thing I got to tell you about the Tour de Trees people,
I'm curious, what was the mile mark that they'd hit when they arrived there?
Oh, I don't know. It was a lot, but they were beat up.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hot. They were riding into the wind.
Wow.
I just don't know how they do it.
They prepare is what they
do. Well, yeah, but,
they're
you know, some of them had
of
kind of gone, ooh, hey, ooh, ha, you know. So, you know, just kudos to them for doing this. I unfortunately was not able to participate yesterday. I'm hoping the thing in Morton Arboretum went well. And the final ride in there, but I got stuck on, I didn't realize they'd shut down 290
Everything.
Yesterday.
The flood. Yeah. I was 2 hours in the car myself.
I'm out in, near Moline, staying at my friend Allie's place on the Rock River. And this storm comes through Friday, about 3:00, the one that ended up coming here, and it knocked out the power. It knocked it out 3 or 4 times and then bam, it was gone for good. And as of Saturday morning, it had not been restored. Winds, trees down everywhere. And then obviously all that came east and hit Chicago and Milwaukee and every place else. But it was an amazing storm. And then I come into town yesterday. And, of course, I'm listening to Mike Sanders and Antonio and Teresa.
It was a fun weekend. They let the inmates take over the asylum.
I know, they did. And they were great filling in for Dick Kay yesterday. But the problem
they're
is...
they're going to jump and we're going to chloroform you one of these days and throw you in a closet and just take over.
I'm already chloroformed. Don't you know that?
Explains so much.
I know it does. So I'm coming in, and because I'm listening to them instead of traffic reports, I didn't realize 290 had been totally shut down, and it was a parking lot. Shunted off to 294 and then 90 coming back. Oh, my goodness, it was awful. It was just horrible. And there was nothing you could do. Once you were on it, you were stuck.
Yes. I got rerouted. I got forced onto the tollway. Forced.
Unbelievable, isn't it? All right. We're coming up on CNN News, and then Mick Dumke, from formerly of the Chicago Reader, joins us at the top of the hour. One of my favorite topics, recycling in the city of Chicago. I hope you'll stick around for that. This is the Mike Novak Show.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Have I been misled? Exit mysteries.
There he is.
I wish they could hear the smile on my face.
They can.
I hope so.
Everybody out there can. That's Paul Sanchez. We talked to him last hour. If you missed that conversation, it was pretty cool.
Yep. He's coming to Chicago, by the way. He will be performing here at Martyrs August 21st with Shamar Allen, who is from the other song that we featured.
Oh, right.
Sorry Ain't Enough No More.
Sorry, yeah.
Both and Threadhead artists and native New Orleans.
And again, you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and you can... click on to the song title, Nobody Knows Nothing, and if you purchase that, the money will go to Gulf Aid. It's a nonprofit corporation to help people down there get over BP.
If you buy any other, we all want to get over BP,
believe me.
Oh, yes. If you buy any other music from the Threadhead site, too, that goes to the New Orleans Musicians Fund and the Musicians Clinic, so you're still helping people down in the Gulf.
And
either way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a win-win.
New Orleans
you can't
musicians.
Lose.
Yeah, either way.
It's New Orleans music, so you really can't lose.
Exactly. And, you know, you could, when we were playing the other song, you could just hear the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. It's just, they're
like,
awesome.
I spent, I was in New Orleans 20 minutes before it had me by the throat. If I could live anywhere else other than Chicago, it would be there.
And I've never been.
I need to remedy that.
I know. I need to get down there. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's an amazing city. Just the vibe and the joy. And I mean, and they keep getting hit and they keep smiling, you know? I mean, it's hard, as Paul was saying before, you know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of that element in it where you try to just not focus on it and not go there. But I mean, it's a city that just like the people are joyous. And I truly believe that they'll come through this in the end.
You know, it's funny you say they keep getting hit and they keep smiling. Same thing happens in the city of Chicago, except when we talk about recycling and that kind of thing. How's that for a segue, Mick Dumke?
Smooth, Mike. You're nothing if not smooth.
I like him already.
Yeah, stop it. Mick Dumke, who wrote the lead story in the Chicago Reader this week, if you picked it up, The title is, Why Can't Chicago Recycle? Mick, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on again.
And I would have had him here in person. Yeah, you want to go answer that door because somebody's insistent out there, Heather. You'd have been here in person, but you're helping celebrate Dad's birthday in Michigan. You're a good son.
Yeah, you got to show for Dad's birthday.
You do, or
yeah,
it's the doghouse for you. it's always a pleasure to have you here because you talk about environmental issues in the city of Chicago, among other things. You do a lot of politics, and instead of starting with the recycling, which we'll get to in a second, let's start with the Reader because you're leaving the Reader.
Yeah, officially I've actually left already, but I finished up this story. That was my last story for now, at least, for the Reader, and have started working for this operation called the Chicago News Cooperative, which is a new news organization in the city made up of some really talented, I think, veteran journalists. And sort of the main outlet it has right now is it's providing stories to the New York Times Chicago and Midwest editions every Friday and Sunday. So be diving right in and getting going with the News Cooperative here.
As Michael Miner points out in the Reader, there's a lot of people in that organization who had jobs elsewhere in the city of Chicago in journalism and then suddenly didn't. I mean, it's sort of what's happening all over the country, not just in journalism, but other industries. People lose their jobs, and sometimes they're really good people, and they have to go somewhere, and that's kind of was the impetus behind the Chicago News Cooperative, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was one of them. I mean, the founder is a gentleman by the name of Jim O'Shea, who had previously been, as you mentioned, one of the higher-ups at the Trib. He'd been the managing editor at the Trib, and then after that he'd been the editor, the top editor at the L.A. Times. And then there's a number of other talented people who either were essentially laid off or decided they'd had enough at either the Tribune or the Sun-Times. So this is a collection of, like I said, veteran journalists who've been at other, major media outlets. And in addition to just wanting to have another place to do their work, I think it's sort of, seen as kind of an experiment in a new form of news delivery and a new form of sort of just organizing a news operation. And so, obviously here's crossing our fingers that it continues to thrive and everything. I'm quite certain, Mike, with the collection of talent there, going to be some really some good stuff that's being produced by the Chicago News Cooperative, and I'm looking forward to being able to sort of jump into the mix there.
And is it going to be primarily online?
Well, right now, yeah, there is a website. It's sort of in development. To be quite frank about it, it's still under construction essentially. I mean, there is something there. You can read the stories every week. It's not a fully engaging website at the moment. So that's going to be sort of the primary means of development day in, day out, is to have new content every day that you can check out on the website. And then, like I said, through this partnership with the New York Times and then with Chicago Tonight on WTTW, the stories are also appearing, both in print and on the Times website and then on Chicago Tonight's website as well right now. And I think that Jim and the other folks leading the operation want to continue to form partnerships with other organizations. I mean, the whole idea behind it is that, this is a group of people that's producing, pieces of journalism content but isn't necessarily like doing all of the distribution itself. And so that's what I mean by it sort of being a new model.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the old Trib and Sun-Times model was, they owned everything from the reporters, the editors, down to the printing presses and the trucks and the guys delivering the actual newspapers. So I think this is an idea. Let's have a business where, just sort of one part of that whole operation, is tied up in this business, and then you're working with other people to do the other parts of it.
And it, you're taking a little bit of a chance here. Obviously, you see the potential of this organization to make a difference in news in Chicago, and I would think nationally as well. So I wish you well in this and congratulate you. It's always difficult to make that kind of a leap, but I think you know what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Mike. I hope I know what I'm doing, that's for sure. But, I do think it's definitely a worth risk taking. I mean, the first thing, and as I emphasized to Mike Meyer, and he wrote in his piece on The Reader, I just say again, the thing I'm most excited about is I really like, Jim O'Shea. There's a City Hall reporter at the News Cooperative named Dan Mihalopoulos, who was in that capacity at the Tribune before he went over to the News Cooperative.
Oh, yeah, I know about Dan because the Chicago Recycling Coalition has worked with him over the years. He's also a very good environmental reporter.
Exactly, and he happens to be a friend of mine of about 20 years, and which is great. I mean, but the main reason I'm excited to work with him because he's a fantastic journalist, I think, and so we're going to be working together pretty closely. And there's just some really other, you know, a number of other very talented people there. And I'm just really excited to get to sort of, you know, put my brain in the same room as these guys and see what we can do. And, you know, it's also, I love The Reader. I'm always going to love The Reader. Been a huge fan of it since long before I was working for the place. But, you know, I don't have to explain to you, Mike. Sometimes you need to make a change for various reasons.
Yes.
And so I'm just really psyched about this.
Well, that's why I respect you for that, because sometimes, yeah, you have to make that change and you have to take that chance because you know the time's right. And if you don't, maybe you're going to miss an opportunity. And so I understand that completely. All right. Now, let's get to the item at hand, which is recycling in the city of Chicago. I want to talk about your piece, Why Can't Chicago Recycle? Give me just a couple of minutes here, and we will get to that. It's Mick Dumke, who is now with the Chicago News Cooperative, formerly of The Reader. His last story in The Reader was Why Can't Chicago Recycle? It's the lead story this past week. If you happen to have picked up an issue, or if you want to go online and check it out, and you can also link to it at my website, and we will be with him in just a sec. The steamy days of summer are here, and with them all the joys and sorrows of summer gardening. Sure, you may be able to get the products you need elsewhere, but you won't get the same great advice and personal service that you'll receive at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. And this is what I always tell people. Box stores are okay, but independent garden centers have information. They have staff who know what they're talking about. Lawn diseases are running rampant this summer and are usually treated with a fungicide. Sid suggests bringing in a sample. And this goes for trees and shrubs, too. Grab something, bring in a sample of the turf, the disease, put it in a plastic baggie so you don't infect everybody else and their plants, and bring it to Sid's, and they'll tell you what is going on. The same goes for infected trees and shrubs, as I said, and they also carry a complete line of repellents to help gardeners live in harmony with nature's creatures. Well, maybe not so much in harmony, or chase them away. You know, we're talking squirrels, rabbits, chipmunks, deer, etc. Sid, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. For hours and directions, visit sidsonline.com. And remember, starting tomorrow, Monday, July 26th through Saturday, August 7th, you can spend your Sid's bucks for up to 50% of your total purchase at Sid's. Now, here's one of the products they carry, and that's Espoma. You want your flowers to bloom like crazy, and one of the best ways to do that is to feed your flowers organic food, and your best bet in the field is Flower Tone from Espoma. Flower Tone is a premium flower food that's low in nitrogen, rich in potash, to promote root growth and blooms rather than heavy foliage. And the natural organics in Flower Tone break down gradually. This gives your flowers access to a safe, long-lasting food reservoir throughout the growing season. Flower Tone from Espoma is formulated to feed annuals and perennials, and its natural formula also contains Biotone, which is a patented blend of beneficial microbes which help improve soil structure. Espoma is the maker of Holly Tone, Plant Tone, and other organic plant foods. If the word tone is in the name, you know it's made by Espoma. Look for all of the Espoma products at your local garden center. For more information about Espoma Natural Gardening Solutions, call 888-ESPOMA-1 or visit espoma.com. ESPOMA.com. Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929.
Let's go in. Come on, be a thread here.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Mick Dumke is on the line. We're talking about his article, Why Can't Chicago Recycle? Mick, why can't Chicago recycle? You know, can we just boil it down?
Yeah,
huh?
I think we can. I think it's money and political will.
Okay, that's all
and
the time we have. Good night.
More,
yes,
more of the latter than the former.
Yeah.
Quite honestly,
you think it's political will is the key and not the money.
Well, over time we've seen. I mean, there were times when the city was flush with money in the '90s, early aughts, and we still didn't get a first class, a functioning or coherent recycling program in place. And so now that we don't have money, I think it's just made it that much more difficult for those inside the city, you know, as well as those of us outside who are clamoring for it. I think it's made it that much more difficult for them to try to get something together. But I personally am not convinced that it's entirely a money issue.
Yeah, and you're right about that. When the city had money, they didn't. Well, they still tried to cheat their way through it with a blue bag, and I don't mean cheat with a T, cheap with a P,
right?
You know, and that didn't work, and it took them forever to figure out it wasn't working, and people like the Chicago Recycling Coalition, which I'm president of, in the interest of full disclosure, beat up on the city for a long time. You did, Dan did, you know, all
right.
These, a number of media sources, and thank goodness for that, because they finally got out of that mess, and then jumped into the blue cart, which is now, as you point out in the article, has created even more of a mess because we have, a partial system. And we have one system for single residences, you know, the four units and under, which is Blue Cart, but that's not rolled out completely. It's only one third rolled out, basically. Then we have the high rises, which is another system altogether. We got the haves and have nots in the city, and as a result, everybody's confused. Nobody knows what to do.
I think you just, you know, summarize the situation very well. You summarized it far more coherently than anyone else can. I mean, it's hard to figure out what's going on. I mean, and I know a number of people, you probably do, who sneak their, you know, recyclables over to the park district and drop them off there. People who, you know, cross the alley surreptitiously and drop them off in a blue bin that doesn't technically go with their building.
Yeah, but and that isn't already filled with garbage.
Right.
That's
exactly
the other thing. Even the people who have the blue carts in the city don't use them properly. I'm not saying everybody, but a lot of them aren't used properly because there's no education behind it.
That's exactly right. And as this really smart guy I quoted in the story said, this guy named Mike Novak, you know, it is almost impossible for the city to do an education campaign because there are so many, you know, caveats, footnotes. It depends on what kind of building you live in and what your address is, whether you have a car, how close you are to a drop-off center, et cetera, et cetera. There's really not a straightforward way to tell somebody, hey, this is what you should do if you want to recycle.
We actually have a call. I'm going to go to line two, Mick, and it's Kaida on the South Shore. Kaida, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Hello.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good, and good morning to your guest. I'm really... this is unbelievable. The recycling concern here in Chicago, there have been so many efforts put forth to bring this about. A bunch of us were even at Taste of Chicago trying to encourage the people to, you know, put their plastic and paper and, you know, separate the food item containers and everything.
And you, when you say a bunch of us, what do you mean by that?
A lot of the C3 Chicago Department of Environment, C3 graduates and leaders were at Taste of Chicago attempting to do a recycling project there. And it was working. You know, we told the people what to do, and they started putting their plastics in, you know, one container in their paper and everything in another. And there have been, Mike, there have been so many efforts to do recycling. I live in a high rise, and they put recycling containers in on every floor of my building back in the early 90s. And then I found out that the disposal service that picks this stuff up is dumping it all in one big garbage truck, even after we've separated it. So, you know, that was discouraging. And I don't know what to do or what the city can do to bring recycling, bring the reality of recycling to the people of Chicago. In the blue carts, we utilize it faithfully. We see people doing it. We see people pull up in their cars with plastic containers, milk containers and cartons, and they are utilizing the big blue carts at the various locations where they are. So maybe your guests can elaborate more on it, because it's really heartbreaking. I thought we were really off and running with recycling, and this is so discouraging.
Well, you know, I never thought we were off and running. It is discouraging. I agree with you. But for those of us who have been watching this for a long time, we were encouraged by the beginning of the rollout of the blue cart, and we thought, well, at least 600,000 of these buildings in Chicago will have proper recycling where the city comes and picks it up. Well, that's frozen now. There's no money left for that. From what I understand, Mick, and you can tell me about this, we're looking at the numbers I'm hearing is a $700 million deficit for next year's budget. Is that correct?
Yeah, that number's been put out there. I think at this stage of the fiscal year, it's probably pretty loosey-goosey. So that's just kind of a number that gives you an idea. But yeah, if we're talking between $500 million and $1 billion deficit, don't expect to see recycling sort of moved up the priority list right away. Mayor Daley's under fire for, among other things, not having enough police officers on the street, and people keep getting shot every weekend. And it shouldn't be an either or. I mean, that's a horrible scenario to be placed in, but the overall picture is pretty bad. Yeah, the budget picture, you're exactly right, Mike.
Well, what can you tell me about other cities and how they're doing their recycling? Maybe Chicago can take some lessons or get some advice from some of the leaders of other cities or states and find out how they're doing recycling and how successful their efforts have been.
I think that's a really good question, Kaida. I'm going to let you go, and we're going to answer that for you. And thank you so much for calling.
You're
really
welcome. Thank you. Have a great day.
And I'm so glad you're concerned about this and that you're doing your part. And that's part of what we need is everybody stepping up and insisting we have this and doing it right. Even if, and I know it's hard to get stuff off to the drop-off centers, but if that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do right now. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Mick, about that, yeah, other cities have, New York has figured out how to recycle. L.A., certainly, you know, towns like Seattle and Portland and San Francisco. And I think you're right. I think it boils down to the political will.
Yeah, I certainly think so. I mean, in fairness, I would say those other places got a much bigger start on this than Chicago did. You know, they've been doing it for a long time. Even New York. New York's had some problems along the way. They for a while, I think, suspended taking, you know, certain kinds of materials. And so they've had some fits and starts. And they're still not, you know, at levels that compare with what you have on the in Seattle and San Francisco. So, and L.A. is so spread out, they've had a different set of issues than mm-hmm.
Yeah, and each town seemed
has.
To have its own issues about that.
Right. So they are apples and oranges to some degree. I mean, let's be fair about it. But I think the overall point is that these cities for years now have made this they've had a commitment to offering this service to their residents and just, you know, wanting to sort of take a step forward environmentally and get this done. And so you're exactly right. That brings us back to the issue of political will. It has to take some people who say, we're going to make this happen. We're going to figure it out. And as we know, that just hasn't been in place at the right economic moments here in Chicago. That's the way I would put it.
That's Mick Dumke, who is formerly of The Reader and now with the Chicago News Cooperative. We're talking about his story, Why Can't Chicago Recycle, which is the lead story in The Reader this week. You know, it's interesting. People focus on Blue Cart, but as you point out in your story, that is only part of the problem. The other is the multiple units, the high rises in the city, which don't even have the city recycling for them, that are supposed to contract with their waste haulers to have that done. But that is, and even though it's a law, the law is pretty much ignored in the city of Chicago because there is no enforcement.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's been a law in the books for about 15 years. That requires these so-called multi-unit or high-density residences, as well as businesses. I mean, it's easy to get caught up and just talk about residential buildings and homes, but, you know, the business sector is a huge portion of the waste stream as well, accounts for a huge portion. So, and that part of it, business and high-density buildings make up far more, almost twice as much waste as the stuff that's produced by buildings with four units or fewer that are served by city crews. So, you know, every time I get a chance to talk about recycling, I try to make that point too. I think, you know, the Blue Cart program, what the city does is considered by people even within the city to be sort of, you know, the first step, the first priority. As Alderman Helen Schiller, you know, put it, you know, it's really hard to put a lot of pressure on private companies to get this right when the city hasn't really gotten it right itself.
Absolutely, you know. Yeah. Although, you know, maybe they could set an example. It could, because if they stepped up, it would be an argument for free enterprise versus government control for those people who want that to succeed over government programs. Maybe the private sector should step up and say, "Hey, look, we got it done. We got the recycling done. Why can't the city?"
That's exactly right. You're exactly right, and I think that, you know. Look, the city doesn't have money to do everything. As you just pointed out a minute ago, the city probably can't be expected to do everything. And people, you know, citizens do have to take some leadership on this issue if they want to do it. I do think that the city's in a position where it needs to be sort of the chief coordinator of all this. And I think
sure.
City officials say believe that as well.
Well, as you point out, you're obviously talking to people inside the administration, people who didn't want to be named, but those people have to be getting frustrated too. We saw the frustration with Alderman Allen the other month when he proposed the order to have blue carts done by September. Well, obviously that's not going to happen, and nothing other than that little show. At City Council gave the alderman a chance to vent during one session, but really nothing's happening with that. But it does show the level of frustration among aldermen in the administration, and you tapped into that.
Yeah, I mean, there are people working very hard on recycling and waste management issues within the city of Chicago, and they're very bright, they're very committed, And they're doing all they can. And I think one of the parts of the story that, yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, Mike, because I think it's really important to emphasize is that, you know, they're not allowed to even talk on the record about the good things that the city's doing. There's just sort of a lockdown on information, and this gets back to the political side of this, whereas, you know, I'm not personally beloved by the mayor and his top aides right now, but, you know, even beyond that, there's just sort of a failure of communication. This isn't seen as a priority. People, even members of the city council, our elected representatives in the city council, have a hard time getting information about what's going on with the state of recycling programs. You know, when they don't have the service in their wards, they don't understand why. They don't understand why, you know, it costs so much, exactly where the costs lie. These are the people who are supposed to be voting up and down in the budget, helping make decisions about the way we allocate, you know, the precious resources we have in the city. And they're not even, you know, on the inside when it comes to information. And so, you know, one of the big issues, I think, you know, we can, most of us would probably say we understand these are extraordinarily difficult economic times. The city probably doesn't have money to do everything that it wants, that it needs to do, right? But, I mean, there's really not much of an excuse, as far as I can tell, for having a lockdown in information. If you're not telling the public what is going on with a public service. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me, but that's kind of the mentality you have at the top of the top of the, you know, leadership of the city of Chicago.
That was kind of an understatement. By the way, that's Mick Dumke, who has moved on to the Chicago News Cooperative from the Chicago Reader. Kind of an understatement about how the mayor feels about you, because as Michael Miner put it, he threatened to shove a rifle up your keister, you know, that puts you, you're my hero, actually, Mick, just for that. Let's take one more question, and this is Ann, also from the South Side. Hi, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, good morning. I live in the 19th Ward, and we have the blue carts, and in fact, I've gotten a second one because I'm passionate about recycling.
Good for you.
And we also have a program called Recycle Bank. Could you talk about that a little bit? I don't really, we're supposed to be getting paid for recycling, and I'd like to know.
Yeah, that's a program where, you know, you're encouraged to recycle because apparently, I believe it's Wade, and you get a credits for recycling.
Right.
So the more recycling you do, you know, it's kind of like a rewards program. And the problem with that, of course, is that the parts of the city that don't have recycling can't do it. I'm not sure that it's and I've meant to have them on the program, which I haven't done. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I do want to have them on and talk about Recycle Bank. Mick, are you familiar with it?
Yeah, I am. It's you guys are exactly right. It's a pilot program that was meant to sort of add incentives to, you know, to spur more recycling. So there was supposed to be a means of essentially weighing the amount of, I think, recyclable materials that were coming out of each household. You would essentially get, like you said, there was a rewards program set up where you were paid or got, you know, essentially gift certificates or something like that, in return for recycling more. This was a pilot program that was just started in the 19th Ward, where you guys are known for your, you know, involvement, high level of involvement in recycling and high level of interest. But my understanding is that has been suspended. I'm not sure. Maybe it's still going on. They're finishing up what they started there, but it's certainly not going to be expanded beyond the 19th Ward because, you know, it just didn't work. And I think that the company did not get the results out of the, you know, the nonprofit organization that does this, Recycle Banks, did not get the results out of the program that they wanted.
Well, that doesn't.
So they're nonprofit. That's what I was wondering. If someone was making money from our recycling, where was it going?
I'll tell you something, Ann. That would work for me. If somebody was making money from recycling, it would be a lot easier for us to convince the city and our citizens that Absolutely. Recycling is so and it at this point the bottom dropped out of the market a couple of years ago, but we're all hoping that the prices for these commodities will start to rise so that recycling will become a financially viable system in Chicago, and that's part of what's going to get us on track there.
It's true, Mike. If I can jump in real quick,
yeah.
The market for commodities has improved. It did drop in 2008, early 2009, almost to nothing, but it has improved, and you know the city does get paid to recycle every ton of recyclables that are pulled out of the garbage stream through the Blue Cart program, the city is compensated for. So there is a market, and people are making money off of these materials now.
And I got to let you go, but thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
Okay, could I just ask you really quick, is our recycling that are going in the Blue Carts, is that stuff actually being recycled?
You know, that's a great question, and we're going to answer that for you. Thank you for calling, Ann.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mick, people ask that all the time. From what you've been able to observe, does this happen, or does some of it get diverted to landfills?
I think that a high level of it, at least from what I understand, is actually getting recycled. I mean, if it goes into the Blue Carts, again, people make money off of this. The city gets compensated for it. The private company that is paid by the city to process the waste at waste transfer facilities, the city-owned waste transfer facilities, you know, they get paid based on how this works. So I think, you know, at least from what I've been told, I haven't sat there and watched the sorting process in action. I mean, I actually have before. It's, I'm one of those people, along with you, Mike, who finds these kinds of things interesting, but not recently. But I can tell you that there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of tons of recyclables, that are kept out of the waste stream and that are actually recycled and that the city's getting compensated for.
And as you point out in your article, it costs money, tipping fee, to take garbage to a dump and a landfill, and there's a financial equation here that the city should actually be making a little bit of money for every ton of recycling it takes in. So if that's the case, if it is profitable, why can't this be finished?
Well, it is profitable. It's profitable on a small level, and then it's a cost saving. So there's sort of a net swing of at least $50
per ton.
Per ton. And when you're talking, you know, roughly 8 million total tons of waste that come out of the city each year, you know, you can do the math. That adds up to a lot of money, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I think the big obstacle, at least as people are explaining to me again, is the infrastructure to get a full program running. And the city's claiming, yes, we are making a little bit of money now, but because the commodities markets are so volatile, we can't bank on them being at the level they are or on them getting stronger. We can't assume that's going to continue in this direction when we place orders for new trucks and when we hire new guys to pick up, you know, recycling. So, that it's just too unreliable a measure for us to make this huge outlay,
mm-hmm.
To get the program going. You know, which is true, I think, in a number of levels. That does make sense to me. But there are other solutions to this. They have certain political problems attached to them, and one of them is, you know, to hire a private company to not only take the recyclables from us, as they're doing now, and to sort them, as they're doing now, but to pick the stuff up in the first place.
Yeah, as you point out in the article, when people talk about privatizing recycling in Chicago, a lot of it is already privatized, as you say. About the only thing that isn't is the pickup by the city.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
And that because it gets to a transfer station and then it's picked up from there, and that's all private. And it's a matter of battling it out with unions. And figuring out that price if we're going to go that route. So as you point out in the article, privatization is not as radical an idea as some people might think. Let's put it this way. It's probably not as radical as privatizing the parking meters was a couple of years ago.
Right. Right. I mean, these are totally different kinds of privatization. I mean, you know, the sale of a city-owned asset versus, you know, outsourcing the service is a completely different thing. Now, you know, I don't want to. I think it's probably unfair for us to sit here and just go off on the unions like they're the only obstacle. I mean, I've talked to a number of city workers for the story, guys who, you know, actually work for Streets and Sand and do some of the heavy lifting, you know, when it comes to our waste management programs. And, you know, I think that they want to see a solution, too. I mean, these guys pride themselves on providing first-class service. And they, you know, you get sit one of them down, they're like, well, the city blames us all on the cost of hiring us. But, you know, start asking them how much they're paying for a truck and which contractor they're using. Are they really getting the best deal they could out of all this equipment? So,
yeah.
You know, when you really get down to it, this stuff is deep. And I think that the point that I would make, and I think, Mike, you would agree with me on, is, like, let's put everything on the table. I mean, if this is really something we're serious about, if we really want to be a green city, we really want to live sustainably, we should be talking about all parts of this and how can we do this. Let's start with the premise of we want to get this done,
yep.
And then you start working, you know, through the obstacles rather than saying, oh, we can't do it because of this, and that.
Absolutely, and I guess that's where we wrap it up, is by saying, if we could have some transparency in these discussions, but see, that's not the way this administration works in the city of Chicago. They're not transparent. You don't find these things out, and when we do, it's an ordinance that's dropped on the desks of the aldermen the day before they're supposed to vote on it. And unfortunately, that's been kind of the history of the way things like this work in the city of Chicago. But if you're right, if we could all sit down to talk honestly about what, you know, and I wasn't blaming the unions. I was just saying that if you go there, you have to negotiate, and that would be
absolutely
part of it. And we have to know the real costs. When they float a $700 million budget deficit, is that number being thrown out to scare people or what? You know, we don't know.
Exactly.
And
you know, there should be a market for these. We talked about there's a market for these commodities. There could be an even bigger one.
Yeah.
Alderman Helen Schiller talks about, like, why can't we be generating, why can't we be helping entrepreneurs start more businesses that use recycled materials? There could be some high-paying jobs, potentially high-paying union jobs at firms that use some of these materials.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's kind of the forward thinking that we're not really seeing right now.
Mick Dumke, formerly of the Chicago Reader, now with the Chicago News Cooperative, always a pleasure. Next time you got to stop in person, and you know, I have a feeling, I just keep thinking something's going to break. There's going to be something that happens soon, and somebody's going to make a decision, and then you and I are going to be scrambling to keep up with it. But, you know, that's life on our end of things.
That's right. Life in the fast lane, as it were, right?
Yeah. Go have fun with your dad on his birthday. Thank you so much, and we're going to talk again real soon.
Thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Urban Wildlife has a new place to call home with the opening of the Nature Boardwalk at Lincoln Park. The 14-acre habitat at the zoo's South Pond is designed to be a slice of prairie in the big city. Though popular for its paddle boat rides, the man-made South Pond had become stagnant and virtually devoid of wildlife. Well, not anymore. I went over there the other week. It looks great. Naturalized slopes in a new island welcome waterfowl and other aquatic wildlife. Prairie plants and more than 100 new trees also help revive the native ecosystem. Enjoy a walking trail around the pond and keep an eye out for black-crowned night herons, yellow-bellied sapsuckers, painted turtles, and more. Also watch for interactive displays and special zoo programs interpreting the new habitat. WRD Environmental, who else, was part of the South Pond Rehabilitation Team. Creating sustainable landscapes since 1997, WRD is a recognized leader in creating eco-friendly settings that bring people and nature together. For sustainable landscape solutions, choose WRD Environmental, and you can find them at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Mowers, string trimmers, and other lawn care equipment can create a well-manicured lawn, but they can wreak havoc on trees. Any kind of equipment carelessly used, even hand tools, can cause trunk wounds. These can lead to disease, insect damage, and even death of the tree. Young trees of all types and thin bark trees, such as birches and maples, are more susceptible to trunk damage than those with more rugged and thick bark like elms, oaks, and ashes. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Many's the times I've been mistaken, so many times confused.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We are going to line one, and I'm going to, you know, I want to make sure I got this right. It's Rhiney, right?
That's right.
Drygala?
Drygala.
Very good. It's one of the oddest names, I have to admit, that I have seen in a long time.
I like it.
It's a good name, but I just wanted to make sure I was pronouncing it correctly. And Rhiney is with a product called Clear Choice, which you've probably heard advertised on Chicago's Progressive Talk. And you guys are calling it a breakthrough technology that kills broadleaf weeds without harming lawns. Tell me a little bit about Clear Choice, Rhiney.
Sure. Well, Clear Choice is really that solution that people are looking for, where they're wanting to make sure that their lawns remain pristine. They don't want to have any weeds in there, but they're starting to get concerned about how many chemicals that they're using out there. And what Clear Choice is that solution for that issue, because we take out up to 85% of the active ingredients, like the chemical active ingredients. And what you end up with is a product that doesn't have a cautionary or signal word, but it's just as effective as the traditional synthetic chemicals that are out there.
But let's get to that a little bit. By the way, you have had a lot of different roles with Petro-Canada, which has put this product together, Clear Choice.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been in the R&D business yourself, or are you just in the marketing and operations?
I do not have a science background, but part of my role is that I have R&D reporting into me. So,
okay. So you get a lot of this stuff, and you see what they're coming up with. All right. So in Clear Choice, the idea is that people are going to use less of these chemicals. Now, you do have some of the traditional ones in there, the broadleaf weed killers,
mm-hmm.
right? How is it that, what's the technology that allows them to use less? Is it a surfactant so that it sticks to the plant more? What are we talking about? Is it an oil?
Sure. Well, what we've seen throughout the years is that the true weed killers are those synthetic chemicals, so the 2,4-D, dichema, and macroprop. You know that when you put those down, you're going to end up with a dead weed. Where we're taking a little bit of a different approach is that we've added a little bit of a carrier in, which is our oil. But when I say oil, this is baby oil. Okay, so we're the largest producer of white oils in the world, and
of which oils?
White oils.
Okay, explain. So what's a white oil?
A white oil is, have you ever used Johnson & Johnson's baby oil?
Sure.
That's the type of oil.
I mean, not regularly these days, but
no.
I know Heather does, my producer.
Yep,
so
I'm a big fan of Johnson's baby oil.
Sure.
But she's got a 3-year-old, of course.
That's the type of purity of the oil that we're working with.
Okay.
So it's something that can be consumed. You can actually drink it. You can put it on your body, no issues. So that's the purity level that we're working with. And what we've been able to do is mix that in, and then we put it through a special manufacturing process that takes the particle size down to under a micron. So really small. And the analogy I use is that if you've ever played basketball with a bunch of friends, and let's say five or six of them all throw the basketball at the hoop at once, how many actually go in? Maybe one, if you're lucky.
They all cancel each other out, basically, is what happens.
They do. And where we do this, by bringing the particle size down so small, we're basically throwing, instead of five basketballs, we're throwing 25 or 30 golf balls at the same hoop. So that when it reaches the hoop, you've got so much more of it going into it, so you don't need as much chemical to get the job done.
All right. What is to prevent people, and I talk about this on my show all the time, that the American way, and are you in Canada right now?
We are in Canada.
Yeah, you're in Canada, so Canadians too, I would think. But the American, in the broad sense, as in North America, the American way is, if some is good, more is better. Mm-hmm. What is to keep people from taking clear choice and using more of it so now they're not using less of the chemical, they're using the same as they normally would? I mean, what's to prevent them from overspraying your product?
Well, I mean, this would be the format that we have. So the ready-to-use format already has 85% less active ingredient. So in order for a consumer to overuse or even just get up to the same amounts of chemical that they're using traditionally,
mm-hmm.
they would basically have to trigger spray about 20 times on one weed. Now, most people I know, when they overspray it, it says take two squirts. They may do three or four. So even if they do spray ours three or four, even 10 times, you're still so much less, using so much less of the active ingredient than you would with traditional chemicals that are there.
Well, that makes sense. If you've got 85% less of the stuff in there, then you'd really have to go nuts to try to...
You would.
So what does this kill then? I know you talk about broadleafs in lawn. Is this specifically for lawns?
It's specifically for homeowner lawns.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about the big broadleaf weeds. For instance, like dandelions, plantain, clover, wild violet, that sort of thing. If you go out there and you find a typical Trimec product, if you look at the list of weeds that deals with,
mm-hmm.
we are dealing with the same weeds that they are.
You know, I on my show, anybody who listens to my show, one of the things I tell people is get used to some dandelions. You know, I know that there are people that think I'm crazy. And these are the people that are going to want to use a product. And if they're going to use a product, I say try to be as safe as you can. And if you guys are using 85% less of the stuff that kills these broadleaf weeds, then that's good. That would be a reason for them to go to clear choice.
Mm-hmm.
But let's face it, I say, is a dandelion a weed? Is clover a weed? Clover especially, I say, you got to be nuts. It's fixing nitrogen. It's putting nitrogen in your soil. Why would you kill it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can understand that too, but there are people who want some kind of control, so they would probably reach for a product like yours, and it would be safer than a lot of products out there.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I mean, this is really geared towards that consumer that, although they're accepting the fact that weeds may be something that would be natural in there, they still want that lawn to look good, but they want to do it with fewer chemicals.
Yeah. All right. Well, the name of the product is Clear Choice, Reiny Dragala is with Clear Choice, and you can go to their website. It's www.todaysclearchoice.com. And they even have a place where you can check garden centers if this is something you're interested in. Reiny, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today and telling us about this.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. You have a great day now, okay?
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Do you know about probiotics? There's only one company that is providing this for your plants, and that's Dr. Earth. Probiotics is a soil inoculant that consists of several species of soil bacteria and mycorrhizal fungi that, simply put, bring life to your soil. We're using Dr. Earth's organic soils and fertilizer in the WCPT parking lot farm. Find out what probiotics can do for your garden. Dr. Earth is available only at your local independent garden center or go to drearth.com to find a dealer near you.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Hokey smokes, are we rolling into August already? Oh boy, the months move this fast only for two kinds of people, gardeners and kids who are counting the days before they have to go back to school. So if you don't want to get lapped by the season, you need a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The July-August issue has all of your Zone 5 solutions for you, including answers for questions you might never even have considered. For instance, there's a story by Madam Editor Carolyn Ulrich about the modern garden that was designed for a Chicago Victorian mansion in Wicker Park, and it honors the past and the present. And if you want gardening over the top, look no further than owners of the Belvedere Garden who decided to go with containers. 250 of them, large and small. Imagine keeping those watered. And then there's my column on the inside back page. Some people say it's a destination. Some people say they run screaming. You won't know until you buy a copy. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but I advise you to subscribe to it and have it delivered to your home. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600. Oh, now you're getting mellow on me here.
This one's more prolific. This one's a really
prolific.
About,
no, no, yeah. I think you mean something else.
I don't mean prolific.
No, prolific means there's more of. This is something.
Well, it's the title of the song is a meaning or a message, and it's about, you know, survival after Katrina, and
yeah,
and it's pertinent to this day. And this is with John Boutte and Paul Sanchez.
Okay. Who we talked to in the first hour, and you might have missed it. They've done some recording for Gulf Aid, and there's a song on my website that you can click to, which is Nobody Knows Nothing, and the money goes to Gulf Aid and helps the musicians and other folk down there. So, listen, we got just a couple of minutes here, less than that. You've been working your butt off in the parking lot.
I have.
Garden. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
You,
I had a good teacher.
And I don't know if you have, but you cannot believe the hoops of fire that Heather has had to jump through over the last few weeks. She's been
you
out there.
You said gardening was easy.
I thought it was. And not with these earth boxes. And what we're finding out, asphalt's a tough place to grow stuff.
And brick.
And brick. And it's just beat up on these plants, but they're still growing. I looked out there. There's a bunch of tomatoes.
Yep.
And some of them still have
we
a little bit
ready
of blossom.
For harvest today on some
she's
of the peppers.
Moved them, if you, you know, and
we
she's put a tent
them, we
over
moved them.
It's just,
we
oh my.
We staked them. We treated them. We trimmed them because we had the powdery mildew, and then we had, what was the blight?
Blossom end rot.
Blossom end rot.
I mean, it's just, I can't believe what everything you've done. And so I just needed to congratulate you on the air.
Thanks.
For
I did take the first cucumber. I awarded
you
myself
whatever you
I
want out
myself
of there,
the
okay?
cucumber.
You know, that's what I want you to do because you have earned it. We're going to take more pictures and keep going. You know, gardening sometimes is easy and sometimes it's not. And all the trials and tribulations are going to be up on our website, MikeNovak.net. And Heather, congratulations
Thanks.
To you.
Just keep it green, Chicago. That's why we do it.
Keep it green. No, go green or go home. See you next week.